Welcome back to Money in America. Today we've got a special guest. This is Lance Azumi. He's a he is a JD. He's a lawyer. He is the Senior Fellow of Education Studies at the Pacific Research Institution. Good morning. How are you, Lance?
Good morning. Great to be on your show.
Well, trust me, we're excited. You're so famous, you were even in the movie Waiting for Superman, I understand.
Yes. I had a part in Waiting for Superman, and it was a great honor to be in that movie, especially because it's become such a phenomenon and has become one of, I think, the most important tools in informing people about the need to change our education system.
Well, let's start with brass tacks. Let's not jump ahead. Why do we need to change the educational system?
Well, I think that there are lots of different reasons why we need to change the education system. But I think the first and foremost is the fact that so many of our public schools are underperforming, and this is not just the case in poor inner city areas, but it's the case also in middle class and affluent suburbs. In my own research, we've looked at schools in California and found that there are hundreds and hundreds of schools in middle class and affluent areas in California, anywhere from Beverly Hills to Malibu to Orange County, where you have very low student performance, and those are the types of numbers that the parents in those areas would be very shocked to see, because they've paid a lot of money to buy their houses with high mortgages, and they expect those schools to be performing, and they're not.
So what you're telling me, maybe I'm inferring too much, but you're telling me there's no correlation between wealth, money spent per pupil, and results?
That's absolutely right, that the amount of money that the school system spends, or even, the amount of money that a parent may spend to buy a home in a nice neighborhood, doesn't correlate to whether they're going to have a school that's going to give the type of performance and achievement for their students, that they their children, that they expect.
Well, in your studies, why is there that correlation? Why or not? No correlation, I guess you'd say. Why?
I think that one of the reasons is because, at least in terms of these schools in the middle class and affluent suburbs, it's because I think a lot of people are apathetic, and they assume that these schools are going to have high performance, and so there's very little pressure on them to perform, and so I think that with people not putting that type of pressure, and with those schools not feeling it, there is little incentive for them to try and improve the performance of these kids.
And yet you look at the studies worldwide, we've fallen to 16th or 15th in terms of math, and 16th in terms of science, and overall I saw in the Wall Street Journal yesterday an article that said that we're actually 25th worldwide in all the educational standards.
Yes, that's right. If you look at our international rankings, especially as kids move along in the school system, that their rankings go lower and lower compared to other countries in the world, and this is especially true when you look at kids that who are tested in the eighth grade. In America, kids who are in the fourth grade test relatively well compared to other countries, but by the time they reach the eighth grade, those scores tend to plummet. So, unfortunately, the longer they stay in the current public school system, the worse they get.
Well, I'll never forget a little anecdotal story. I had a friend who had a foreign exchange student from France, stayed with him for his senior year of high school. So here he is in Erie, Pennsylvania. The kid goes through the entire senior year of high school in Pennsylvania, in America. And I talked to him at the end of the year, and I said, "So, you're going to go to college next year?" And he looks at me kind of funny, and he says, "No." I said, "What do you mean, no?" He says, "I got to go back and do my senior year in Paris." I said, "Why? You just did it in America." He says, "Because they don't count that as school." Oh, what a shock that was. I mean, that's how the French even view our education system.
Well, and I'm not surprised, because, one of the things that, we look at here in California, the state offers a test of two high school juniors to see whether they're ready for college. And again, if you look at these schools in middle class and affluent areas, you find huge numbers of kids who take this test in their junior year, and they're unprepared for college. And so I can understand that French student who, will go back to France and have to basically retake that senior year, because, that the senior year or the upper high school years here in California and probably the rest of the country do not prepare them for a college experience.
If we can get right down to the basics, you know, peel all those layers off the onion, why? Why is our school system, is it because of the powerful unions protect ineffectual teachers? Is it because we're all just so placid and I don't understand. What do you really see as being the core reason for the ineffectuality of our schools?
Well, I think there are several reasons. I think you hit on one of them. I think that the strength of the teachers' unions, and if you look at some of these teacher contracts that have been negotiated around the country, you find that, they protect teachers who, have obviously not performed in the classroom. In fact, in one of the books that I've written, we looked at the teacher union contracts here in California, and, you have provisions in some of these contracts where it prevents the principal from even going into the classroom making unannounced visits to see what's going on.
Are you serious?
Even when they announce their visits, the principal is limited to viewing what's going on in the classroom for 4 minutes. When you have that type of restrictions on supervision and evaluation, you're going to get a lot of bad teaching.
So why do school boards put up this? Do school boards not understand what's actually happening?
Well, I think that, school boards, I mean, there are a couple of reasons why, the school boards are much more ineffective than they should be. And one is the fact that, a lot of times you have these boards that are elected with a bunch of, John Q citizens who want to do a good job, but they oftentimes simply listen to the powers that be within the district, whether they be the superintendent or the teachers' unions. And they end up rubber stamping contracts that they really shouldn't. Secondly, I think one of the phenomena that you see here in California and in the rest of the country is that who has the most interest in electing people to the school board? Well, it's often the teachers' unions, and they all also have the most money. And so many of the school boards here in California are dominated by union-backed candidates. And so therefore, you end up with the union basically negotiating with itself when it comes time for contracts.
I'm sorry, but I like the way you put that. Yeah, you bring to memory 1937, FDR, Roosevelt said, the public unions, public employees should never be unionized.
And I think there's a lot of truth to what the FDR said, because if you look at the consequences that have happened, certainly within education, with the strength of the teachers' union, it's not only, caused a lot of problems in terms of governance, who controls a school district, but also in terms of, the effectiveness of the teaching in the classroom. And so, when you look at, that type of dysfunction that's occurred because of the unionization of the teacher corps and also the collective bargaining process, I think that, FDR was, a prophet at that time.
Yeah, and look at, he's obviously a liberal in comparison, and nowadays they would hold him up as some kind of teabagger and try to crucify him with that kind of remark.
It's funny how times change, but, it's interesting that, it's unfortunate, too, that, here you have FDR who's making that type of observation. Here in California, we just reelected Jerry Brown as governor of California, and he was the one who signed into law the act back in the 1970s when he was first governor, the law that gave teachers the ability to collectively bargain.
Yes.
So, in California, we seem to be, going backwards.
Well, everything that's old becomes new again. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. It's deja vu all over again. And unfortunately, it's not going to help our students, I think.
All right. So now we get a little better understanding of the mess that we're in. Where do we go forward, Lance?
I think the important thing that we need to do is to improve competition, increase competition within the our education system. One of the things that I've done is to go around the world to look at other education systems in other countries where they have increased competition. For example, I did a film called Not As Good As You Think, The Myth of the Middle Class School, where I took a film crew out to Sweden. And in Sweden, they have a universal voucher program where every child has a voucher, a school choice voucher that they can take to any school within the country, whether it's public or private independent. And, you know, it's worked out incredibly well for the Swedes. Parent satisfaction is incredibly high. And also, too, it's improved the performance of the students, both in public and private schools, because, as the governor of Stockholm told me in one of our interviews, that the headmasters in the public schools look at what's going on in the private schools and say, well, if they can do it, then so can we. And so, therefore, they try to improve their performance because there's competition. If they don't improve, they're going to lose their clientele and go out of business.
So basically what you're telling me is when there's a freedom of choice and you have a competitive situation, people will choose the better.
That's right. They'll choose better, and people who are running the schools will have to listen and be more cognizant of the needs and demands of the students because, you know, if they don't, if they ignore the wishes of the parents, they're going to lose those kids to other schools, whether public or private. And so, therefore, it makes them much more customer-oriented, and you know, you have a much more improved and effective school system after that. And I think that one of the interesting things is that there is such support for this type of system in Sweden that even this a program was initially enacted by a non-socialist government back in the early 1990s. But when the socialists came back into power, the program actually grew. The more private schools were formed because even amongst voters for the Social Democrats, there was such support for it that the socialists had to actually support the system and actually grow the system.
That's amazing. I just never seem to be amazed at how freedom, in the big, broad, general sense, seems to be the answer for so many of society's ills. You know, when you have freedom of choice, when you don't condemn people to live in a box, suddenly, you know, creativity flourishes and people start to have success in a wide variety of venues. You know, maybe I'm just naive, but that's what I keep seeing.
No, that's right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, freedom works, and freedom is what people want. Especially when they experience freedom, they don't want it to be taken away from them. And I think that you know, even in countries, like I say, that like Sweden, which many Americans picture as being a socialist, very government-controlled type of country, you know, when the Swedes, people like the Swedes receive freedom, you know, they then hang on to it and want more of it. And I think that the same can be said here in the United States, that, you know, in those small areas where you've had you know, school choice programs such as Milwaukee and Washington, D.C. until recently when the Obama administration canceled the program, that, you know, people really, really love those programs and they want more of it. And I think that that's the challenge for Americans, especially, you know, in areas, you know, in red areas of the country, that, you know, they need to realize that they're going to be benefiting from freedom and school choice, and that this isn't something that is limited or is necessary only for inner-city poor kids.
Well, Lance, is that really what you're then advocating then, that we do, is go to more of a school choice kind of thing?
I am. I advocate a universal school choice system where, you know, parents have access to opportunity scholarship vouchers, whatever you want to call it, where the money follows the child so that that child can go to whichever school he or she prefers and which would meet the needs of that child the best. And I think that, you know, it's something that cannot be limited to just targeted groups, that every child deserves that type of choice here in this country. And I think that not only should it be a right for the parents and the child, I think that it would be a huge benefit for the public school system in terms of improving it, giving it incentive and motivation to change from the current, you know, low-performing status quo.
Well, okay, one curiosity question then. Yeah, we homeschooled for about 5 or 6 years, 6 years, I guess. We homeschooled our kids. I still paid school taxes. Now, charter schools are getting public funding, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
It seems like the only one who's getting financially shortchanged still is the homeschoolers who are paying for their own schooling of their kids, which, you know, we figured ours bring us roughly $1,000 to $1,200 per kid that we homeschooled. So I'm dishing out $2,400 a year to homeschool my kids, roughly, and I'm still paying school tax. And if I would have sent them to school, I wouldn't have the $2,400, you know, out of my pocket, so to speak. Do you have any qualms with the financing of those things?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, I think that you know, people who homeschool and people who pay for private school tuition are being double taxed, basically, in terms of the provision of education. I mean, you know, you talk about your experience as a homeschool parent. I mean, a person who sends their kid to the local Catholic school or the local private independent school, you know, is also paying a tuition, and yet they're also paying taxes as well to support the public school system, even though their child is not getting any benefit from it.
But the charter schools are paid by the government, though, correct?
Yeah, the charter schools are paid for by the government. But, you know, that's why I think that, you know, the way to solve a lot of this double taxation problem is to, you know, again, attach that funding to the child so it can move to wherever the child wants to be schooled, whether in a private setting or even a homeschool setting, because I know a lot of homeschoolers also use, you know, networks of education providers to, you know, help them in the homeschooling process.
Well, just so, as a little side note, we were ridiculed for many years by a lot of people for homeschooling our kids, although my mother did not, which is only relevant in that she had an she had her superintendent of school certificate, has 4 degrees, why not? My own mother, who taught for years, thought it was a wonderful idea to homeschool because she understood the public school system. But what I was going to say is the people who ridiculed us for homeschooling always said that they weren't socialized and they weren't that wonderful, and yet year after year you turn on the TV and you watch the spelling bee and the top 4, 5, 6, 7 kids out of the top 10 are always homeschooled. You look at the SAT scores, the top 4, 5, 6, 7 kids every year are always homeschooled. You know, it's like, okay, you can prove that the public school system is not working if you can use that 3% of the population as homeschools as your base, your verification base. Make sense?
Yes, no, it does make sense. You know, and I think that it's out of ignorance too that people say that homeschoolers aren't socialized. And my understanding, my dealings with homeschoolers here in California is that there are lots of opportunities for socialization, because there are, homeschoolers teach their kids not in isolation, but oftentimes, in networks with other homeschoolers. So that it's, those kids do get the opportunity for socialization, just not in the way the public schools would want them to get it. Also, too, here in California and in a number of other states, you have virtual charter schools where kids, get their education at home through online learning. And, there's a lot of criticism similar to the homeschoolers that, those kids aren't getting the socialization. But again, in these virtual charter schools, there are lots of opportunities for groups of students within the virtual charter school to get together, for socialization purposes. And so, yep. I mean, it's a kind of criticism that is made because not enough people rebut it with, the type of evidence that, actually shows that these kids are getting not only a better education that meets their needs, but also, too, that they're getting the type of contact with other kids.
Exactly right. Now, Lance, forgive me, we're running out of time, but you've got a book out. What's your book titled?
Well, we have a new book coming out actually next week called Short-Circuited, The Challenges Facing the Online Revolution, Education Revolution in California. And it talks about this whole phenomena of virtual charter schools, online learning, education, et cetera, and, what the obstacles put up by government and by the unions that will prevent people from taking the fullest advantage of these tools.
So how do people get a hold of that book? If they want to purchase your book, where can they find it?
Yeah, if they want to purchase the book, they can actually just go on to Amazon.com, and it's listed there. Again, it's called Short-Circuited, The Challenges Facing the Online Education Revolution in California.
Well, super. Thank you so much. This has been Lance Azumi, JD. He's the Corrett Senior Fellow and Senior Director of Education Studies at the Pacific Research Institute. And this has been Money in America with Randall Turner.